Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast for February 5th, 2009. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports, and with me today are...
I'm Evan Drexler, the sports editor and football beat writer.
Kyle Maestri, online alligatorsports.org editor and baseball beat writer.
Mike McCall, football beat writer and columnist.
Yo, 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 Phil Kedler, football writer and columnist.
Basketball writing savant, Mike Fernando. All right, and we got a lot of topics to talk about today, but we're going to start off with some story that made national headlines today. Mike, you want to explain what's going on with Lane Kiffin and Urban Meyer?
Okay, well, basically, Tennessee's new coach, Lane Kiffin, just announced his first recruiting class yesterday on National Signing Day, and then this morning, he was speaking to a group of volunteer fans at a breakfast. I guess he got a little carried away and a little too excited. And he basically called out Urban Meyer for a recruiting violation in that he called Pahokee wide receiver Nukeese Richardson while he was on an official visit to Tennessee last weekend. Now, Richardson's whole story is a second thing that's a big deal because he's from Pahokee in Florida. Florida's gotten a lot of players in there. They're really talented. And this kid committed last May. I mean, he was a commit to Florida for a long time. And then at the last second, Tennessee swung him away. It was a pretty big, win for Lane Kiffin, somebody who, when he was introduced as Tennessee's coach, said he was most looking forward to singing Rocky Top all night after they beat the Gators next year. So he clearly has it out for Florida. And anyway, this morning he said to the people in attendance, he's going to go ahead and turn Florida in for a violation right now, and said, Urban was calling Nukeese when he was on his visit. That's against NCAA rules. And he said, I'm glad that Urban had to cheat, and he still couldn't get the kid. So, Lane's just out here to make some waves. I mean, he also, at the same meeting, this is what really surprised me, is he went after Pahokee. He talked about how hard it was getting the facts in from Nukeese Richardson on signing day and how they don't have their stuff together down there. And it makes me think he's not just doing this to get at Urban Meyer. He's just a guy who likes to talk, and he likes to say a lot of things. And I can't understand why you would slam Pahokee, an area with a ton of talented recruits where you're going to have to go back. I mean, does he think they don't have computers or they don't have newspapers and they're never going to see or hear this? I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. But anyway, so he accuses Urban Meyer of a recruiting violation. That really ticked off Florida Athletic Director Jeremy Foley, issued a statement just blasting Kiffin. It's not a violation. He demanded an apology. Kiffin gave him one. So I guess that's where we stand now. But it's a good thing Kiffin backed off a little bit on a statement. But I'd still expect Urban Meyer to call a few late timeouts or something.
All right, let's go around the room here, get some opinion on the story. Evan, you wrote a column about this for Friday's paper. How do you feel about Lane Kiffin's little outburst?
Yeah, I mean, the first sentence of the column is, well, that was stupid. And, even in the heat of the moment, Lane Kiffin going and saying, Urban Meyer's a cheater, calling him, I can understand him embellishing a little bit for the fans and the new people that he's going around in his first year at Tennessee. But you got to think a little bit about something like that. Mark Richt, Georgia's head coach, saw what happened when you get Urban Meyer mad. And everyone remembers Georgia celebrating after their first touchdown in the 2007 game. And the next year, Meyer and the Gators come out, destroy Georgia. And at the end of the game, Meyer calls two needless timeouts in the last minute, just to kind of rub it in and really make the Bulldogs feel stupid, really, aim that at Mark Richt and his team a little bit. So, I mean, you can really expect Meyer to be thinking about this all offseason, even if it's really not that big of a deal and Lane Kiffin was really just exaggerating. The fact is that Lane Kiffin said these things. Lane Kiffin called Urban Meyer cheater. He backed off, but there's always going to be some kind of truth behind a joke or behind some exaggerated statement. Lane Kiffin is setting himself up as a guy who is just going to say things without thinking and is going to say things to aggravate people, and he really wants to get himself in the mix. But, Southeastern Conference football, anything he says is going to get taken down and is going to be remembered. And Urban Meyer will not be happy next year.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because Meyer has won two national championships. Kiffin has yet to coach a game in the SEC. Why is he doing this?
Well, I have a pretty strong opinion as to why Lane Kiffin's doing this and why he shouldn't do this also. I think he's doing this because college fan bases are very emotionally attached, and he's trying to score points early. I think by going at the top dog in the conference, Urban Meyer, he's making a point that, hey, I'm here, and when I'm here, Volunteers aren't going to back down from anybody, including the Gators, much like Harbaugh did when he got to Stanford and took it right at Pete Carroll right away. So that's why I think he did it. At the same time, I think he's messing with something a little too serious here, though, with the recruiting violation, because he should have a talk with Bruce Pearl about what happens when you seriously blow the whistle on recruiting violations, because Bruce Pearl did it, and he did it for the right reasons, and it was a moral thing for him, and he got blackballed and ended up at Green Bay, Wisconsin for a while before landing a major job. And there's something within the, you know, coaching fraternity that says, you know, come on, guys, we all bend the rules. You don't really blow the whistle on other coaches. So if you're going to do that, I think that's something that you need to take seriously, and I don't think it's something that is going to help him later on with relations wherever he needs to go after he gets a job or after he's dismissed from Tennessee or steps down or whatever the future holds. I don't think Lane Kiffin's going to be there for 20 years. So,
all right, Phil, anything you got to add to this?
Well, personally, I love situations like this. I'm a fan of college rivalries being the big deal. I'm a fan of Lewis Murphy saying Miami's not the U anymore. And I understand from university standpoints that they don't want to give bulletin board material to other universities, but, you know, situations like this, I think, just stirs it up. I mean, obviously, when Tennessee comes to the Swamp this fall, it's going to be a lot bigger deal. You know, Fulmer's gone now. Lane Kiffin's there. And this might be completely off the wall, but considering Lane Kiffin's background, he was recruiting coordinator at USC for a couple of years, and then he has all these big-time recruiters on his staff, I'm not past saying that he knew it wasn't a violation when he talked to boosters this morning. That he was just kind of stirring it up. He was just saying, you know, look, Urban wanted this guy, and I wanted this guy, and I got him anyway. Like, woohoo, I'm great, I'm Lane Kiffin, Tennessee's awesome now. Because I think if he really felt, if he was really blowing that whistle, he would have filed a complaint against Florida. He wasn't going to do it. And I think this was just stirring the pot. But it is a big high-risk-reward situation here. Like, if Tennessee comes out and they're not very good this fall, then it's going to look like a joke.
All right, Mike.
I completely agree with Phil. I mean, this couldn't be any better for the rivalry. I mean, this is what SEC football is all about. Coaches hate other coaches. Fans hate other fans. This is the kind of stuff that really gets everything going. And good for Lane Kiffin. Good for him having, you know, he was wrong, I guess, but it doesn't, good for having the toughness to go out there and do something like that. I mean, come on.
All right, well, this whole thing came out of a recruiting episode there. Mike, you're familiar with the recruiting class here at Florida. How do you feel like it graded out this year?
I mean, I think they did a pretty good job. They got 16 recruits. It's much smaller than what they've had in the past, but they didn't have spots open because everyone's coming back. I mean, they have their top 22 players coming back on defense and you know, a lot of offensive players. So there just wasn't room to bring in a ton of people. But as far as what they needed to get, I think they probably have to grade out as an A. I mean, the story I wrote about this yesterday, I talked to a recruiting analyst, and he said that he felt like the class was an A, basically just because they're filling the needs that they had. I mean, they lost three senior offensive linemen. They signed five. They lose a couple of receivers. They bring in Andre DeBose, who is supposed to be the next Percy Harvin. I'm not totally convinced of that yet, but he's supposed to be the next Percy Harvin. So they're filling in the slots where they lost people, and that's what's important in recruiting. It's not, you don't just want to bring in a bunch of guys with, you know, five stars on their chest, because if you're just bringing in people and you don't have spots for them, they're going to end up transferring. And you're going to end up with people who aren't happy, and then, you know, angry uncles get involved, and that's not good for anybody. So, I mean, you look at what they did. They did what they were supposed to do. But the thing about this class people are going to have to be patient with is that most of these kids are not going to play early. You're not going to see an early impact from the guy I'm most excited about in this class, Jelani Jenkins, the linebacker. I mean, he's 16 years old. He's got a lot of weight to put on. He's got to get stronger. He's going to be a great player, but he needs time to develop. And that's how a lot of the people in this class are going to be, especially offensive linemen. I mean, the Pouncey twins have been an exception here at Florida, but usually offensive linemen take a while to develop, especially the good ones. They get seasoned into the role. So I think that's what you're going to see with this recruiting class, but they did what they needed to do.
I got a question for Mike or anybody else who has an opinion on this. Is there anybody in this class who we think needs to get time next year except for DeBose? Like a guy like Will Hill, where it's like, all right, we got 2-3 guys in front of you on the depth chart, but we're going to create ways for you to get on the field. I don't really see it, but if you guys maybe like 1 or 2 players, not, I mean, other than DeBose, I just don't see that happening next year.
I mean, Gary Brown is a guy who could potentially do that. He's a defensive tackle from out near Tallahassee, and I mean, he's a guy that's been really lauded by a lot of recruiting analysts as being like an under-the-radar type guy who could really explode in college. So I think you should keep an eye on him, because with the way the defensive tackles are, I mean, you don't really know. I mean, Torrey Davis was great in the national championship game. Is he going to still be here next year? We don't know. Maybe. I mean, you just don't know how those guys are going to develop. And with Dan McCarney there as a defensive line coach, I mean, he can work wonders. So if he gets this guy in right off the bat and he develops the way they need him to early, sure, he can get on the field. And then Mike Gillisley, I mean, the running back, another fast guy who can carry the ball. You know, they can always get some points. They like those guys around here. Yeah, I mean, not a ton of people who need to be on the field. DeBose needs to be on the field because Urban said he doesn't want to change the offense. And there's no one who can play the Percy Harvin position right now. DeBose might be a guy who can do that.
All right, anything else? Anybody on recruiting here?
I mean, I think the only worry point here is coming at tight end behind Aaron Hernandez. I mean, I'm not big into recruiting here. Desmond Parks, I know, is kind of unheralded. If he turns out to be a star, then that's great. But if not, then, you know, who's kind of picking up
take
the slack?
Take Casey back for a seventh year. Next year.
I don't think so. I mean, there's still a couple more years of Hernandez being around. But down the road, you know, that's a position that he's dead.
And they're still recruiting Orson Charles, too, a tight end from Tampa. He has not signed yet. And he kind of owes Florida because he broke their national championship trophy 2 years ago. So, I mean, he should sign it. He's good. I mean, he was actually ranked on Rivals.com as the 7th best wide receiver, and he's a tight end, so he's pretty athletic.
All right, let's move on from recruiting then. We're going to talk about softball. The Gator softball team is opening its season Friday night against Baylor with a 3-game home series. Kyle, you covered the team last year. Unbelievable year for the team, 70-5, semifinal loss. Can they improve on that?
I think that's a really good question that I honestly don't know the answer to, but pitching-wise, they can't get any better than they were last year. Stacy Nelson was as good as you can possibly be every day inside the circle, because in softball, you could pitch every day. So, I mean, Brombacher, I think, will be a little bit better this year, so Stacy can get a little more rest. But honestly, she didn't even look like she needed it at the end of last season. Hitting-wise, I think Tiffany DeFelice could end up being great this year. So if Anaya kind of takes a step back with her knee injury, I think she's somebody who could come on and really give them big numbers. Same thing with Corey Brooks, who really came on at the end of last season. But, I mean, their lineup was great last year. Allie Gardner was amazing. Kim Walzonia, both of them are first-team All-Americans. So there's not a whole lot of room for improvement. I think the only thing they really need to work on is being mentally tough enough to win games at the end. And if they can do that, they have enough talent to win the whole thing.
But losing Mary Ratliff out in right field and at the plate, I mean, can't be good for the team, right?
I mean, I think Ratliff, mostly they lose leadership ability, because she kind of struggled down the stretch against really good pitching, as much as she gave them very clutch hits. But I think somebody will step up, somebody will fill that role. It's who's going to be the leader for this team, and we'll, that's yet to be seen. We'll see who fills that slot for the rest of the season.
Now, right. Radliff's still around in Gainesville, correct? Is she still helping out?
Yeah, she's staying on as an assistant while she, you know, finishes out her time here academically. So, yeah, I think her being around the team really will be great. It's like she never left for them. So,
all right, well, the team had 5 losses last year, regular season and postseason. Let's go around the room here. More or fewer losses than they had last year, Evan?
I'm going to go more, but I know nothing about softball, so take that at face value. I'm going to go 7 losses, be as specific as possible, for no reason.
Kyle?
I'm also going to go more, just because I think they only lost 3 games during the regular season last year. That's unbelievable. I don't know if that's going to happen. They can possibly do that again. So I'm going to go over by a couple games, but they will go further than they did last year. I think they at least make it to the championship game and probably win the whole thing.
I was going to say more for no reason, but now that they both said more, I'm going to say less for no reason. Four losses.
Way to argue your point, Michael. Yep.
Well, it kind of threw me off because I was going to say less. But I will stick with less. But there's so many intangibles over that long of a season and trying to win a title that I think talent-wise they're going to be fine. I think they'll lose 3 or 4 games. I haven't had a chance to really look through their schedule, how tough it is this season. But I don't. Something just tells me that I don't think they're going to win it all again. The pressure of walking into a season saying you are number one, you are expected to win it all, sometimes can throw teams off. And I think it'll be a challenge to keep them focused mentally, Coach Wall.
All right, deeper.
I think it's got to be more. I mean, 5 losses last year, that's ridiculous. I mean, that was an aberration, I think. Softball is a sport where you just don't lose only 5 games. So as good as they are, as good as Stacy Nelson is, I don't think it's realistic.
The biggest reason to go over in this discussion is because Alabama is the number 2 team in the nation, and they play in their conference. And if I'm picking a team to win besides Florida next year, I'm picking Alabama, because Charlotte Morgan might be the best hitter in the nation. She absolutely is a beast. And Kelsey Dunn was their number 1 last year, and she was just a freshman. So she's only going to get better in her time there.
Too deep.
All right. Well, they're also playing Arizona State, who's very highly ranked in a tournament out early. So, I mean, the schedule is a little bit tougher than it was last year. But the other thing about this team, we kind of know what we're, you know, we kind of know what to expect because they only lost one player. Who do you see emerging as a star this year that didn't last year?
Well, like I said, I really like TD. I think Ifelis has a huge season this year, as long as she stays healthy, because she had a couple issues with hand injuries she suffered during the College World Series, but I don't see that being a problem from her. And Corey Brooks, I think, has a big year, hits a lot more home runs than she did last season. Other than that, I don't know who else could possibly have a big year that isn't already producing for them.
I would just throw this out to anyone kind of here. How big of an impact do we think Anaya's knee injury is going to be? I mean, her freshman year, she has an ACL problem. She doesn't hit well. I mean, is she going to be good again?
I wrote an Anaya feature. It's running tomorrow. And her freshman year, her stats, she hit like 225 with 6 home runs. She just sat out a month. But for her, that's, you know, that's terrible after what she did in her sophomore season. And she said that it was not because of – she didn't want to blame it on her knee. She didn't say explicitly that it was not her knee. She just said she didn't want to blame it. When I talked to Coach Walton, he said for sure that it was her knee injury. So I'm not going to say that she can't put up the same numbers she did last year, but I'm going to say there's a chance the knee injury limits her.
All right, well, let's move on from softball because McCall is looking at his cell phone, clearly interested in this conversation we're having right now. All right, let's talk a little bit about the men's basketball team. Deeper, you follow this team day in and day out. They're struggling to find an identity at this point in the season. It's basically Nick Calathes is consistently playing well, and then the rest of the team, you don't really know what to expect. I mean, who's the next best player on this team?
I think there's no argument that Nick Calathes is the team. I think if you take him with it, 500 at best, maybe. But I think you got to go Alex Tyus. Without him in the paint, they really have no big guys to speak of. So they're kind of going to go how he goes down the stretch. If he can produce in the paint, if he can rebound, they have a chance to make the tournament, maybe win a game or two. But without him, I don't know where you go.
Bill, you have an opinion
on this? That's a joke. I think there's no way that,
really?
The UF men's basketball team wins 2 games in the tournament. If they're a Sweet 16 team, then my bracket's going to be busted. Because there's no way I'm going to go to Sweet 16.
2 games is not a bracket bust.
It would be for me, because I don't have the making of the tournament. But I just think it doesn't even really matter who's the next best after Calathes, because whoever second best is isn't all that great. Because
it doesn't matter?
Better.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't matter?
You got to disagree with the point that it doesn't matter, because it's a team. It's not Calathes. It's the team.
But whoever it is, if it's Tyus or Parsons, they're both not good enough.
See, I disagree with that point, because me and Deifer had a heated conversation on Chandler Parsons, and I think Chandler Parsons is very important to the team. I don't think he's consistent enough to be that second scoring option and a great player for them. But if he was consistent enough to do that, and he does end up being a really good player here, I think they will be infinitely better for it, and they'll look like a different team if Chandler Parsons is great.
Here's what I'm saying. Here's why I would say Chandler Parsons, and this is a huge departure from my previous discussions about UF basketball. They're only good when they shoot well. If they don't shoot well, they don't win. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter what Alex Tyus does inside. If they don't shoot well, he's not going to get all the rebounds. Like, and no one else is either. Maybe Nick Calathes. and when they shoot well, it's Chandler Parsons is shooting well. I mean, he's that second guy who can shoot besides Calathes. And sure, Calathes can go AWOL and just start jacking up shots from all over the court, and he'll probably make half of them. But they're at their best when there's another guy scoring, and the only other guy who can be that semi-consistent scoring threat at best is Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the point, is this team lives and dies by the three-point shot. When Calathes is on, he's doing fine, but if Parsons isn't stepping up, if Hodge isn't hitting 2 or 3 three-pointers a night, if Irv isn't hitting 2 or 3 three-pointers a night, they don't have the front court to keep up with it, and Alex Tyus can't do it all by himself, especially with this injury that we got to Alan Chaney today, so...
And Ed Hodge, really. Does he even play on this team anymore? He's been missing for a few weeks now. But, yeah, I mean...
He had 10 points on Tuesday against South Carolina.
Including the free throws.
The free throws were big. The free throws. But he missed the first two, and gave everyone a heart attack. But, I mean, he did play well on the stretch against South Carolina. But that's the first big game he's had in quite some time. So I don't think we need to go Walter Hodge as the savior here. But, I agree with Chandler Parsons. I think, Kyle, before you kind of look past the three-point shooting, I know you argue his percentage isn't great. He knocks down 7 of 8 against Vanderbilt. He can shoot the 3, and when he's on, they win. So you can't just discount that.
If you're going to throw the 7 of 8 at Vanderbilt, I have to go. He's 2 for 12 in the 3 games since Vanderbilt, which backs up my point that he's very inconsistent. I agree with you that Tyus is the second best player on this team. He comes to play every night. He does little things that some of the other guys don't. And hopefully KG can step up for them if they want to do anything in the tournament.
If we're talking little things, we got to talk Dan Moore.
How can we forget Thunder?
Operative word being little.
Come on, leave Dan
Moore. All right, just so I don't look like a complete idiot here, I do agree that if Chandler Parsons, you know, has like an identity crisis and decides to be a good basketball player, and he's really good and really consistent, then this team will be very good.
I mean, the problem here is that we're constantly using the word if. If this happens, if they have front court, if Chandler Parsons can play well, and I mean, honestly, do any of us really think that all those ifs are going to come together to bring this team to the tournament?
Well, Parsons,
and success in the tournament.
Parsons has played well as of late. Since the loss of South Carolina, he's scoring double figures every game. He shot the ball better. He's getting to the basket.
Yeah,
does he look good?
Yes.
He looked like a good player.
He has played better. I think he's developing a consistent scoring effort. Night in, night out.
But
barely beat South Carolina with him being good.
At what point does it?
You can't control Devin Downey knocking down 11 points in the final minute of a
damn
game.
Right, you can't control Devin Downey.
Which was unbelievable, by the way, for everyone who was there.
They can barely beat South Carolina. And they're going to go to the Sweet 16. Anybody else see this as ludicrous?
No, they're not going to the Sweet 16.
I'm not saying. I said they could win a game or two in the tournament. If they get a favorable first round.
I agree with Deeper. Last year, I hated Villanova the whole season, thought they were garbage, and they ended up in the Sweet 16. So you don't know who's going to get hot for one weekend.
Nick Calathes is good enough to carry them to a win or two in the tournament. Tournament's all guard play. That's what they have. They have guards.
I mean, you keep talking about Chandler Parsons is developing into a consistent player. He's developing into this. But at what point is it past tense? At what point has he developed? And when are we going to say, okay, this is what we can consistently expect from him night in and night out? Because it's always developing. When will he get there?
I mean, I think he's a sophomore. I mean, are you trying to, like, call his career over right now?
No.
But this team, the quality of this team depends on Chandler Parsons greatly. We're not debating whether or not Chandler Parsons is a great player right now. He is only a sophomore. But the team is only going
to
be – it's not only going
to
be as good
to
as
say,
Parsons
to
is,
say
but,
Chandler Parsons is only a sophomore in college basketball is to say somebody's only a 7-year vet in Major League Baseball. Yeah. Because these guys come in as freshmen and sophomore, they're heading to the NBA out the door. Nobody stays for 4 years anymore. So he's not – you don't get guys who come in as freshmen, sit the bench, and then mature to seniors very often. So I think it's fair to say he's approximately what he's going to be for the rest of his career here.
I mean, who are you comparing Chandler Parsons to on this team? Are you comparing him against Calathes because they went to high school together and stuff? Because that's not a fair comparison.
I'm comparing him to the college basketball landscape as a whole.
Chandler Parsons is a 6'9 swing man. He can shoot the 3.
Consistently, the consistent three-point shooter.
He shot 32%.
He's a consistent scorer, not necessarily a three-point shooter. He gets to the basket. I think you're looking past all the things he's done in the last couple of games. All
right, let's move on from the Chandler Parsons show that just emerged here.
Chandler Parsons project.
Don't worry about the name for this podcast. Mike, you wrote a column earlier this week about your experience at Thompson Bowling Arena in Tennessee. First of all, explain what that was all about.
Basically, I said that, you know, if not for Billy Donovan being here, I can't understand how a recruit could go visit Tennessee and visit Florida and want to come here over Tennessee. I just think Billy Donovan is obviously he's the cornerstone of this program, but I think he's the program. That's all there is right now. The fan support here is not good. The atmosphere at Tennessee was, like, incredibly bad. I can't even, like, tell you. There's no, like, gauge for how much better the atmosphere was in Tennessee. And Mike was there with me. He can back this up. Now, granted, and Evan was too, a lot of people, like Kyle here, is going to say in a minute or two, I went there for one game. College game day was there. It was a huge game. Sure, that's all true. That is true. I've only been there for one game, and it was an unfair comparison to the rest of their games. But they have a better arena. They have more basketball support up there, partly because it's a bigger city, partly because they have a good women's basketball program. But the bottom line is they do have better basketball support up there.
McCall, that is really an unfair comparison because you didn't see a women's game. You want the real action. You got to go for
Phil Kegler defending
game.
Women's basketball. No way.
I was impressed by the large number of banners hanging from
there. Every commercial break, there was a Pat Summit advertisement on the screen in the middle. Pat Summit says, come to this game. Pat Summit says, eat Coca-Cola. I mean, everything was Pat Summit.
Well, if we want to get back to the real reason Newkeith Richardson went to Tennessee, he was in Tennessee for that game. No doubt at the basketball game was swayed by the unbelievable Thompson Bowling Arena crowd. So,
all right, Kyle.
I'm going to say a small piece about this and then back up because I can't mentally handle this argument for like the eighth time since the column was written. But I'm just going to say this. You were there for one game day, like you said, and I think that's a pivotal point of this whole thing. The other thing is you say Billy Donovan's the whole program. I think after the Magic debacle, after everything went down, I don't think Billy's leaving. I think he's going to stay. I think they're going to name the court after him. I think it's going to be Billy Donovan, iconic coach, you know, like you see around the country with Coach K and guys like that. So I think he will always be there. You talked about the banners. UF's got a couple banners now that Tennessee's never been past the Sweet 16 in the history of their program. Florida went there, you know, before the 04s, they went to the championship game, lost to Michigan State. Before Billy Donovan, they made a Final Four. They're not a historic program like UCLA or Kentucky or something like that, but they do have better basketball tradition than Tennessee, and I hope everyone sitting at this table agrees on that point.
Yeah, that's
here's what sickens me. They have won two championships recently, back-to-back. Incredible. Amazing.
Fantastic.
You know what they should name after Billy Donovan? They should name the top level of seats and put tarps over them because no one's using them. They won two championships, and the upper ring is empty against South Carolina, a team they're tied for first in the SEC East with. Come on. If there are any people listening to this in the first place, and any people among those who happen to be Florida basketball fans, please email me if you disagree. Right, tell me how many games.
I'm going to bring in a point that we've not talked about in all our arguments here. Because Florida fans are spoiled, I'm going to use the word spoiled, because they win titles in every sport every year. Football, you know, two BCS titles in the last three seasons. Do they not bother showing up if their team's not winning a title? I mean, I think that that's a fair point, and that's the reason that perhaps they're not turning out. I think once this whole, like, we're not, you know, we expect the national championship from every team that's on our campus feeling dies down a little bit because you can't stay on top forever. I think actually teams like the basketball team now might get better support.
So you want the Gators to go on like 3-year losing streaks and just like miss tournaments and have the football team go 6 wins, 7 wins. And that'll bring them back to the basketball program.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Football program's in such good shape right now. They're probably going to win another national championship in the next 3 years. There's a good chance they're going to win it next year. I mean, that's not going to help with the basketball team.
It's a football town right now.
Yeah, and it's always a football
town.
Those are the same fans.
But during the 2 years that the 04s won titles, these talks were ludicrous, but there were talks. Is Gainesville becoming a basketball town now? Obviously, we have our answer now. It was not. But that was the feeling that was around Gainesville.
I mean, I would hope that you're at least in consideration for being a basketball town when you have quite possibly the best basketball team ever. Best college basketball team.
But we can round up 5 great basketball players and drive to Alaska and play there and win a national championship, and Wasilla, Alaska is not going to be a basketball town because of it if no one shows up for the year after those guys leave.
And opening up, I mean, we saw some comments in your column online saying, you know, open up the upper deck and more lower level seats to students. I really don't think that's going to bring anyone else in that isn't already registered.
Parts of the student section are empty.
Yeah, the upper level student section is not full for most of these games. I've been to maybe 10 games this year, and the student section is never full in the upper deck.
How many friends do you have, or maybe you guys do this yourselves, go get your ID swiped at a basketball game and walk right out of the arena and don't stay?
So you can go see Kentucky.
Exactly. That's the point. If Florida fans want to have an argument about this, start coming to some games.
Yeah, show up. But anyway.
Calling them out.
One of the problems, I mean, you're terrible basketball players. but I mean, one of the problems too, and nothing's going to get done about this because people don't go to games, is that the O'Connell Center isn't a great like place to go watch something. It's not, I don't have a problem with it or anything, but there's no like, you know, they don't have club seating. They don't have like luxury suites. It's different from most of the arenas you go to.
There's no question that Thompson Bowling completely outclassed the O'Dem as far as just straight on facilities.
Well, that's what happens when you're from Ponte Vedra, Mike. Not everything's all classy here in Gainesville.
The house that Pat Summitt built, that's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, and the house that Bruce Pearl gets people to come to. Yeah. So,
shirtless Bruce Pearl.
They think it's a women's game.
Yeah, you know how here Florida fans get trapped into going to women's games before the men's games? There they get trapped into going to the men's games before the women's games.
And then they come back.
All right, they keep coming back. Let's move on to our last topic here today. Brian Steele wrote a column in an earlier edition of the paper this week saying that Stacey Nelson, was the second best athlete at UF. I'm going to open up the floor here, starting with Phil. Name who do you think is the second best athlete at UF in terms of importance to their team and why?
All right, well, I interpreted the question a little bit differently here. We've had some arguments over this. I'm going by who is the best at their sport more than like an MVP conversation. And when you change the question to that, there's really no doubt in my mind. Stacey Nelson, pitcher, softball team, is better at softball than, you know, Nick Kalathis is at basketball. I mean, it's close. Nick Kalathis is a very good basketball player. Brand Spikes, very good football player. But Stacey Nelson is just a dominant pitcher.
I'm going to say Stacey Nelson, based on being good at what she does. I mean, she is incredibly dominant. Part of that owes to the way the sport of softball works. I mean, one really good pitcher is going to just romp through everyone. But she does that, and she's very good at it. So I'd say her, in terms of importance to the team, I guess I'd go with Kalathis. And I think it's also funny to point out how long you can go in a discussion like this without even having to mention the fact that Tim Tebow is number one.
I'll stand up for volleyball a little bit. Elise Cusack, the junior libero for the UF volleyball team. I mean, she played on a team last season that had Amber McCray, Marcy Hampton, Keisha Killingsworth, and Angie McGinnis, and she might be the best one when it's all said and done. I mean, those four seniors were dominant. But Cusack, I mean, without her, they're not getting any, you know, they're not getting any digs off the floor to set and spike. And so this year, Cusack, you know, kicked butt again. And as a senior next year, she might be able to lead this team farther than the Sweet 16, which is where they've knocked out the last couple of years.
Well, I think Stacey Nelson is the best at what she does. But I think if we're going back to who's the most important to the team, it's definitely Kalathis. If Stacey Nelson gets hurt, Stephanie Brombacher can step in and play, and they can go deep in the tournament. If Kalathis got hurt, they wouldn't even come close to making the tournament basketball. So I think you have to look at it like that, too.
Even from this point on. If he got hurt today, I would have expected him.
Yeah.
Probably. As much as I love Irving Walker and all he does for that team.
And you do love it a lot. All right, well, Kyle.
I'm going to say something a little controversial here. That's the other day. And that is, I think Stacey Nelson is so clearly number two above, you know, who else we had on the poll, Kalathis, Spikes, Cusack. That I think the argument is better, is Tim Tebow better at what he does than Stacey Nelson is at what she does, than Nelson to the next person under her. Because she's one of two pitchers in the nation last year, I'd put Tincher in the same category as her, who would just go out and single-handedly shut teams down, and that was that. If Stacey Nelson's on the mound, or inside the circle, your team has a chance every single day solely because of that fact. And I think that's I don't know, that makes the conversation here.
I respect what you're bringing up, and I do fully acknowledge that Stacey Nelson is an incredible softball fisherman. She's great at what she does, but I think Tebow is kind of untouchable where he is right now, winning a Heisman Trophy as a sophomore, probably going to win one as a senior, probably going to leave here with three national championship rings. I mean, he's on a whole other level. You kind of have to temper what someone's good at compared to what someone else is good at. Like, I'm the best Tecmo Super Bowl player any of you will ever come up. But that doesn't stack up to being a quarterback in the SEC. Just like being a pitcher in softball doesn't stack up to being a quarterback in the SEC.
And Tebow's won. He's got two rings, got a Heisman Trophy. Nelson was beat by Angela Tincher for Player of the Year, and she didn't win the title. So until Stacey Nelson wins the title, it's clearly Tebow.
Would Angela Tincher be the second best athlete if she played at UF? Is that the point you're trying to make? Like, she's better than Stacey Nelson?
No, it's not the point I was trying to make.
Well, it's hard to say just because you don't know the conditions.
Here's the thing. The reason that they lost was not because of Stacey Nelson. Stacey Nelson took the ball twice against Texas A&M, beat them the first game. They got a ton of runs. She sat the rest of the game. Brombacher came and closed it out. She took the ball again. She threw 1,000 innings in 2 days and shut them down for, I think it was 10 innings. Shut them out. It was 0-0 for 10 innings, and eventually Texas A&M scratched a run across. That's the offense's fault that they didn't get a ring last year. They didn't get a championship. So, I mean, I think that I agree with you. She'll have to prove it. Her team's going to have success. But she's already brought them a couple SEC championships they never had before she got here. So,
all right, any parting shots on that debate? Nobody?
I'll take you on a Tecmo anytime.
Oh, yeah. Evan, by the way, when is the poll getting released for the best video game of all time?
Oh, I'm closing that poll Friday night, and so everyone who's been dying to find out what Alligator Readers thinks is the best sports video game of all time, you will find out Friday night.
Big women's hoops game Sunday. Televised on ESPN2. Florida host Tennessee. Depending on what Tennessee does against Georgia, Pat Summitt may still be going for 1,000th win.
Can we talk a little Detroit Red Wings before we go?
No.
Anyone? Anyone? Hockey?
Check versus that, gentlemen. All right, well, that wraps it up for the Alligator Sports Cast. Keep an eye on alligatorsports.org on our blog for some show notes about this, and send any feedback, post it on the blog, or send it to sports@alligator.org. And thanks for listening.